From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Happy Thanksgiving to you, and thank you for being part of our program. You are the best audience in the world. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and you're with us because we're live for you tonight. Later on, the Gene Machine is what's happening. Well, people are actually starting to line up at some retail stores right now in anticipation of Black Friday. That is supposed to be the biggest retail day of the year. And it's the kickoff, they say, for the Christmas shopping season. Retailers are keeping their fingers crossed, hoping that you're going to go out and buy. And you just might. But I'm not sure I would get in line right about now when the stores will open in 6 to 8, 9 hours from now. Wow. Black Friday. It's on the way. A new bombshell report based on a secret trove of seized Iranian nuclear documents shows that the Islamic Republic had concrete plans to manufacture and build at least 5 nuke weapons, and that it was much further along in the scheme than previously known by the international community. Iran's contested weapons program was much further along than the international community even thought, according to a report based on scores of secret Iranian plans seized by Israel and publicly disclosed for the first time earlier this year. The Boston Marathon bomber, Dezhosa Sanarov, wanted to plead guilty and cooperate with prosecutors in exchange for life in prison, but the prosecutors turned down the idea, according to court documents. He, of course, has been convicted, sentenced to death in 2015. His brother was killed in a shootout with police. The death penalty has not kicked into effect yet for him. Searchers in areas devastated by the deadliest wildfire in California found 2 more bodies, bringing the number of known dead now to 83, but the list of those believed to be unaccounted for dropped by several hundred to about 800. That's still a lot. One of our great guests, L.A. Marzulli, lost his home in the fire, and L.A.'s with us right now for an update. L.A., first of all, happy Thanksgiving, and how's your family coping, sir?
Well, we lost everything, as you said, George. The fire came through like a freight train. We were actually speaking at a conference down in Dallas, and our daughter said, look, it's close. We were watching the news. We knew it jumped the 101 freeway, and Saturday afternoon, we realized that the house had burned, and I went on and spoke anyway, and stayed actually till Monday. There's really nothing you can do at this point. They were able to take out some of the cameras and the computers, thank God, and, of course, our standalone hard drives, but absolutely everything. We lost absolutely everything, the house, the studio, 30 years of projects all around the place. The good news is, and I'm not getting religious on you, but I'm going to get religious on you. Romans 8:28 tells us that even through this, God works everything together for good. And I'm not certain exactly where this is going to go, but I believe that somehow he will work good out of this. We have a GoFundMe page and people have been contributing like crazy, which really will help us out. And you can get that to that by going to lamarzulli.wordpress.com. But the fire, you know, George, there's some stuff about that that's really troubling, and I know I got a short amount of time here. They were spraying chemtrails. I actually have it on video on my phone. For days during the summer, for days on end, they were spraying right over our area, the Santa Monica Mountains, literally. And my wife and I used to go out and go, you know, it's like, why aren't people protesting this? Why doesn't somebody say something? These aren't normal airplanes. This is a whole different thing. And look, 4 hours later, they're still there. In fact, they billowed out and they created a silver patina over the entire sky. There was a grove of oak trees that had died in the 8 years of drought right next door to us. This guy's got 20 acres or whatever, or 40 acres. And he didn't do anything about it. And the reason why is to cut down even a dead oak tree, you need a permit. You got to have the county get involved. Mm-hmm. And he had like 30 oak trees there that were dead. It was a tinderbox 100 yards from where I live.
I just can't imagine what everybody has gone through. Will you rebuild in that same location?
We're actually looking to get out of California at the present moment, maybe over to Oklahoma where our friends Gary Stearman and Bob Ulrich are, and just relocating there because the permit process is going to be arduous. Welcome to L.A. County. It's another level of government, and who knows how many hoops they'll make us go through just to build on your own property. It's just if people really knew how draconian the building department is in LA County, I mean, this is government. This isn't government. This is like oppression, and it takes years to be able to even rebuild. So we're looking at all the options right now, George, but it's, you know, we lost everything, including all the equity. It's all gone. Up in smoke.
Well, you keep in touch and give us your GoFundMe link again, would you, LA?
You can go to lamarzulli.wordpress.com. There's two ways to give if you feel motivated to do that. The GoFundMe account link is there. The PayPal link is there. People have been incredibly generous, and we just thank those who have given in our hour of need and really appreciate it.
And let me tell you, it's a good Thanksgiving for you and your family because you're all still alive, my friend.
That's the deal.
L.A. Marzulli, great coast-to-coast guest, and he needs a little help there. A nutritional supplement may be able to slow down the development of some cancers and enhance the effects of treatment, according to a study in mice. Mice with pancreatic, lung, or skin cancer were given mannose, a sugar also found in cranberries and other fruits. It significantly slowed the growth of their tumors with no obvious side effects, according to researchers. Amazing story there. When the heart stops, the blood supply in the brain is quickly cut off. In operating theaters, this moment could be recorded as the official time of death. But studies are showing that the dead person's mind and consciousness continue to work, at least for a short time, meaning that the deceased can recognize their own death. Indeed, there is some evidence to suggest the dead person may even hear their own death being announced as they lie on an operating theater table. The implications for almost all of the world's religions, which dictate a transfer of the soul at the moment of death, are absolutely profound. Howard Bloom, of course, has been a regular contributor here at Coast to Coast AM with a lot of different topics. And tonight I asked him to briefly tell us why we need to be thankful. Howard, happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Happy Thanksgiving, George. So the question is, what do we have to be thankful for? Now think about this. We live in a world of material miracles thanks to Western civilization. If you'd been born in 1850, your life expectancy would have been 38.5 years. But since you were born in modern times, your life expectancy is 78.5 years. In other words, your life is likely to be 40 years longer than it would have been in the good old days. Yes, your life is literally twice as long as it would have been back then, but that's not all. Your IQ is 35 points higher than it would have been in 1915. To put it differently, by the standards of 100 years ago, you're almost a genius. What's more, the poorest paid worker today earns what an entire tenement full of the poorest paid workers earned in 1850. In other words, today's most underpaid laborer earns what seven Irish dock workers earned in the days just before the Civil War. You are also 4 inches taller than you would have been in 1900. And most important, you are one-tenth as likely to die a violent death at the hands of a fellow human being as you would have been in 1650. You are also one-tenth as likely to die a violent death at the hands of a fellow human being as you would have been if you were born into one of those wonderful indigenous tribes that supposedly live in harmony with nature and at peace with their fellow men. Which means that the world you and I live in today is 10 times as peaceful as it was in the days of Oliver Cromwell. Here's what all this means to you and me. If our great-great-grandparents could give us an extra 40 years of life, it's your obligation and mine to give our great-great-grandkids another 40. It's up to us to make sure our great-great-grandkids live to the age of 120 or more.
Yep.
If our great-great-grandparents could give us an extra 25 points of IQ or 35 points of IQ, we owe another 35 points to our great-great-grandkids. We owe our great-great-grandkids an average IQ of 170 points, way up there beyond the genius range. If our great-great-grandparents could give us seven times the salary of way back then, we owe our great-great-grandkids seven times the salary that we earn today. We owe them a minimum wage of $70 an hour. And most important, if our great-great-grandparents could give us a world 10 times as peaceful as it was way back in the days of yore, we owe our great-great-grandkids a world 10 times as peaceful as the one we have today, which means the bottom line is this. Let's get cracking. We have a lot of work to do. We are the makers of the next great step in Western civilization. We are the lifters of our great-great-grandkids' lives. We have to give thanks. then we have to pay it forward. Or to put it differently, every day you wake up is the most important day of the next 20 years of your life.
Thank you, Howard, and a great Thanksgiving to you. And another thing to be thankful for, Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center. Hi, Peter.
Good evening, George, and happy Thanksgiving to you and all our audience. I was touched by Howard's comments on how much we have to be grateful for. I've spent a good portion of today with friends and devoted a lot of time to thinking about all the wonderful things that we have in the United States that we enjoy and how lucky we are. We're also lucky to have a thick stack of UFO reports from this past week, and let me start reading some of them, George, and see how deep I get into this pile.
All righty.
First one comes from Delray Beach last Sunday, the 18th of November. A gentleman was walking along the beach, he writes, at 7:30 p.m., and he looked up into the night sky and saw a cluster of what at first he assumed were stars, except he couldn't figure out why they were in a cluster. And they were moving across the sky as a cluster and also relative to each other. And they suddenly accelerated and disappeared over the western horizon. Very interesting, very intriguing sighting. The next one is from Ulaga, Oklahoma, 20 miles northeast of Tulsa, very close to the birthplace of the late Will Rogers. Monday, the 19th of November, a gentleman was working on a customer's roof, and the customer called his attention to four white spherical objects in the daytime sky. Beautifully clear sky, he writes. And the peculiar thing was the two lower ones were leapfrogging across one another. One would jump across the first, then the first would jump across the second, and so on. Very, very unsettling sighting to these two gentlemen. Third report is a doozy, George. This is another airline crew sighting.
I love these sightings.
On Monday of this week, the 19th of November at 10:45 a.m. Pacific time, a pilot and co-pilot of a major American who worked for a major U.S. airline were preparing. They were over Avenal, California, which is northeast of San Luis Obispo. They were setting up to start their descent from 35,000 feet into Los Angeles when suddenly an object, a black object, the pilot thought, just streaked across their windshield. He immediately got on the horn to air traffic control and requested whether there was any traffic near him. The response of ATC was not within 20 miles of him. Very, very convincing and unsettling report for anybody who flies on airplanes. Fourth report comes from Issaquah, Washington, just east of Seattle. A woman who is a very skilled night sky viewer came home with a load of groceries. She got out and looked to the east and saw two very bright lights in the eastern sky. They started to fade, which intrigued her because usually satellites, they don't go west for one reason. They were approaching her from mm-hmm. the east, and they don't fade in that fashion. Last report I'd like to share is from Pine City, Minnesota. A woman and her daughter were driving to the north. Their attention was drawn to four yellow lights in the northern sky. I'll make it a short report, George. They got close to it, and they realized that those four lights were attached to a solid object,
wow.
a disc-shaped object that was self-luminous, and they have no idea what it was. It suddenly accelerated and shot across the sky and disappeared from their sight. That's what my week's been like, George.
Keep it busy, and we'll talk to you next week. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Well, welcome to our Thanksgiving night program. George Norrie with you, and our special guest tonight, Mitch Horowitz. Mitch, of course, has been known as the voice of esoteric ideas. He's a writer in residence at the New York Public Library, a lecturer in residence at the University of Philosophical Research in Los Angeles. He has won a number of awards. He has written everything from The War on Witches to The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan. His latest book is called The Miracle Club. And welcome and happy Thanksgiving, Mitch.
Thank you, George. I'm so delighted to be able to spend part of it with you and the Coast family.
Likewise, my friend. What's new with you?
All is well. I had an unusual Thanksgiving. I spent the entire day binge-watching horror movies because this Saturday I'm participating in a documentary about cursed horror movies. So the producers sent me a list of horror movies they wanted me to watch, from Poltergeist to The Omen to The Exorcist to the Twilight Zone movie, all of which are thought to have some sort of curse associated with them. So it gave me an excuse to binge watch horror movies all day on Thanksgiving. Kind of a weird Thanksgiving, but I really did enjoy it.
It's either that or football. You know, take your choice,
so
right?
For me, in this household, it's horror movies. So it goes.
You have a different thought on gratitude and how important that is. Tell me about that.
Oh, yes. You know, every thought that we have really serves almost a kind of auto-suggestive function in our mind. And if you think about things that you're grateful for, you almost program your subconscious like a homing device to key in to those things. And there can be extraordinary power in expressing gratitude. In fact, as I was thinking about tonight's show, I put together a very short, very simple 4-point program, especially for Coast listeners, that you can do to bring the power of gratitude into your life.
And what does the power of gratitude do to you?
Well, first of all, on the simplest level, it makes you a better person to be around. It makes other people want to do things for you and spend time with you. But I do believe that, as I've written about in the Miracle Club, our thoughts have causative properties. Our thoughts have extra physical qualities to them. And when you dwell upon something in your life, you are contributing to its multiplication in your existence. It's extremely important, both on a psychological level and, I think, on a broader creative level.
Now, these 4 points, which we'll get into after the break, Mitch, are important to people. But is gratitude also as important as attitude?
Well, you know, it's interesting, George. There's a great Iowan writer named Christian Larson who in 1909 coined the phrase attitude of gratitude. It was popularized by Oprah, but the phrase was coined over a century ago. The idea of an attitude of gratitude is that you're always sort of standing fully up with your chest out and your shoulders straight and the willingness to take life on the strongest possible terms, to define yourself and to define other people around you in the strongest possible terms. So, you know, if you can incorporate a sense of appreciation and a sense of forward-looking possibilities and options into your daily attitude, you become a nobler, stronger person. But again, I think there's a metaphysical quality to it as well. There is a process of thought causation that really exists in our lives, and I go through this in the book, and it can be so simple to tap if you're just willing to direct your attitude towards possibilities, options, and acknowledgement of things that you have to be appreciative
of. All right, let's get into these 4 points, Mitch, when we come right back on our Thanksgiving night program right here on Coast to Coast AM. Everett, Washington is our live stage show in March. It's our first one of the year. There will be many others, but March 23rd will be in Everett, Washington. Get your tickets before they're gone. A couple ways you can get them, and it's a great show, by the way. A number of guests, meet and greet, music. It's just a fun program. I've got just got an email from a couple that wants to come from Boston to Everett. That's a long flight. They're determined. So you can get your tickets by going to coasttocoastam.com, click events at the top of the homepage, or the carousel reel where Lex has the trailer and the attachment to the Everett Theater. It's a direct link for you, so you can do it that way. If you don't have a computer, you can call 425-258-6766, 425-258-6766. We are back with Mitch Horowitz with his latest book, of course, The Miracle Club, How Thoughts Become Reality. Mitch, tell us about the 4 important points to start doing this.
Will do. I've never talked about these 4 points before, so this is kind of a first-time run exclusively for Coast listeners. Point number one, when you wake up in the morning, you should make it a practice every single day to make a gratitude list, and you should be able to identify at least 3 items that can go on your list. There are always 3 things for for which you can be grateful.
Give us an example.
Oh, you could be grateful for health. You could be grateful for friends. You could be grateful for any number of things that come to you. Number two, you should take daily gratitude breaks during the day. We take coffee breaks. We take stretch breaks. You should take at least 3 gratitude breaks during the day, and you can take many more. It can be in between work. It can be while you're in your car. It can just be a few silent moments that you privately reflect while you're in a meeting or something like that. Make it a practice to take daily gratitude breaks. Find at least 3 people. This is step number 3. Find at least 3 people every day to thank, to appreciate, or to encourage. And you should try to find 3 new people, and it can be something as small as just complimenting somebody on something or really going out of your way to thank somebody for doing something for you. It's a demonstration of appreciation that multiplies, because when you model that behavior, other people will repeat it. And finally, number 4, at least once every day, whether morning, midday, or night, you should pray in gratitude, pray in appreciation, pray in thanks. So this is, it's a very simple 4-point plan. Number 1, your morning gratitude list. Number 2, gratitude breaks during the day. Number 3, find at least 3 people to express appreciation to over the course of the day. And finally, number 4, pray in thanks at least once a day. It's a very simple program. Everybody can do it, but it only works if you really apply it. And make it a practice 7 days a week.
Once you do that, what happens?
Once you do that, you will see that you will feel nobler, you will feel better, you will engage in less gossip, you will be the kind of person that people look to as a leader. People will come to you asking advice, you will stand taller, you will sleep better, you will feel better, and you may be very, very surprised to find that extraordinary things come into your life. You know, terrible tragedies do strike us, and your segment and your continuing segments on the California fires have been so, so important. But insofar as catastrophes strike us, absurdly good and wonderful things also come into our lives, things that depart from all expectation. You will bring more of these positive things into your life if you follow a program like this one.
Tell us about the title of the book, The Miracle Club. I like that.
Yeah. The Miracle Club is a tribute to my heroes, really. There was a small group of New Yorkers. I live in Manhattan. There was a small group of New Yorkers who gathered together on the west side of Manhattan in the year 1875 with the goal of exploring the paranormal, all aspects of the unknown, the uses of the mind, questions of ESP, questions of contacting the spirit world, and they called themselves the Miracle Club. They were just a little cluster of folks, and they only hung together a short period of time, but they formed the nucleus for a much larger and more influential organization, the Theosophical Society, which was hugely influential in ushering in the whole revolution in alternative spirituality that has swept our world. But this little smaller group, the Miracle Club, they were very informal, and they had just one principle. You had to want to try. You had to want to experiment. You had to just want to ask the question, what is out there? So I wanted to recapture that spirit of experimentation in the book and offer people ideas as to how they could use their own minds in a grown-up but also extraordinary way to try to test the limits and the extent to which our thoughts shape our reality.
You believe that sleep and the ability to tap into all kinds of powers like telepathy and ESP really back up our strengths and powers of the mind.
Oh, for real, absolutely. In fact, I never go to sleep at night without, during that very relaxed period, those few moments just before you drift off, without using affirmations or visualizations or prayer. Those few moments just before you fall asleep at night are a natural meditative state that we all enter into. And sleep researchers refer to it as the hypnagogic state. It's an extraordinary state of mind that can be seen as prime time for reprogramming your psyche, for introducing suggestions to your subconscious, and serious psychical researchers have also found that it's prime time for episodes of ESP and telepathic activity. It's a wonderful period of natural relaxation when your rational defenses are down and your mind is in a dreamlike state, but you still have control over your own attention and your cognition. Use that period of time just before you drift off to sleep to affirm or to visualize something that you want in your life. It's a remarkable period of time psychologically. You can reprogram your subconscious, and also psychical researchers have found a spike in incidence of ESP and telepathy during this period of time. It's a very creative period of time, and we all enter this state, this exquisitely relaxed state, just before drifting to sleep. Everybody naturally goes into it, so use it.
Mitch, let's talk a little bit about the holidays, of course, and depression. I've talked with our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, about that with his thoughts.
Yeah.
But, why does it seem that people tend to get depressed more during the holidays? I heard from some people in St. Louis that some young guy killed himself tonight because he was depressed.
No kidding.
It's crazy. Why does this happen?
You know, it's interesting. I think the holidays lay two forms of stress on us. One form of stress that the holidays lay on us is this excessive expectation that we're supposed to be surrounded by revelry and love and relaxation. And the thing is, you can't summon up these things on demand. You can't order these things on demand. If you feel like sitting around and, you know, watching football or binge-watching horror movies like me, you should be able to do that. You should give yourself permission. You should give yourself approbation to do that. You don't have to engage in conventional activities. And I think people feel very forced and stressed and pulled to participate in the conventional. That's one part of it. The other part of it is, quite frankly, people sometimes find being around relatives, family, coworkers, acquaintances, incredibly stressful. They feel tormented sometimes mm-hmm. by people that they're supposed to be closest to. And one of the things I write about in the Miracle Club, and I tell you, George, this can be one of the most powerful things in a person's life. If you feel that you are around other people who are bullying you or being cruel to you or running you down, you can make the resolve to separate from these people. And I mean separate and burn your bridges behind you. And even if you are unable to physically separate from someone, maybe for financial reasons or other reasons, you can still make the internal resolve to separate from that person within, and at the first possible opportunity to separate physically. In fact, never give up the principle that you are around everyone in your life by your own consent. You control that. That belongs to you. That is one of the most basic aspects of life, whose company you choose to be in. And I always tell people who get depressed or stressed around the holidays, and it's a very cyclical thing, that they must always remember that they have this choice, this sacred choice, who they're going to associate with. And if you're around people who you feel devalue you, run you down, you can cut those ties, or you can at least vow to cut them at the first physical opportunity. It will introduce an extraordinary feeling of agency and choice and purpose into your life, and that really belongs to you.
Why does it seem, Mitch, that the more you use your mind, the more active you are, the more younger you appear and act?
Isn't that wild?
But it happens.
It absolutely happens. There is a research psychologist at Harvard named Ellen Langer. And one of the things she has been studying, going back to the 1980s, is that if you place elderly people in settings that remind them of their youth, nostalgic settings that evoke the music and the styles and the news and the television shows of their youth, she has actually tracked that physical symptoms of aging decline and improvements occur in blood pressure, muscle mass, flexibility, and even eyesight. There's also a great improvement in mood. the idea that you can associate the mind with things that evoke feelings of youth and vitality not only serves to lift the mood and ease depression, but actually reverses the physical symptoms of aging. And Langer has been doing these studies at this point for decades, and it's absolutely extraordinary. It upends everything that we've been educated to believe, which is that certain aspects of physical decline are inevitable and they're kind of set in stone like a calendar that can't be voided. Well, some of these things can be eased or reversed. It's vitally important that individuals stay in touch with what made them feel vital, alive, joyous when they were young. Don't let go of those things. Those things actually have healing properties. It's remarkable.
What do you think when you come across people who don't practice many of the things you've been talking about tonight, Mitch, and they're on the opposite end of the spectrum? They're mean to their fellow person. They're cruel.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, I see people who have what you would consider to be outward success. They drive nice cars. They have lots of money. But you can tell that they walk around in a state of anxiety, a state of anger, a state of depression. They're easily offended. They're constantly erupting in anger. They're grabbing for things all the time, like they're always desperate. It's not an authentic happiness. There's good reason to want material prosperity. To be providing to yourself and others is a great, great blessing. But I certainly encounter a lot of people who have, by accident or by luck, some of the finer things in life, and yet it doesn't produce happiness. They are so easily upset, and their anger and their negative emotions are on such a tripwire that it's evident that an absence of gratitude, an absence of appreciation, an absence of generosity has eroded them from within.
After Thanksgiving tonight with my family, we all met at a little restaurant, and we already had eaten and everything, but we wanted to just get together as a family, so we got together. And as I was walking to the parking lot to get in my car so I'd get ready to get to the studio for tonight, I had been working it real early. I woke up like at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple coming my way, and I didn't know who they were, but I just stopped and said, "Hey, happy Thanksgiving." And you should have seen them. Their faces just lit up.
That's remarkable. Yeah. It's wonderful. You know, that's part of the four-point program I was talking about. You can always find an opportunity to say hello to somebody. Just make the road a little bit easier for someone. And you know, George, you never know in what ways it will come back to you, because there are a lot of ancient myths, and you find this in scripture as well, where the gods or angels come disguised as just ordinary travelers. So just performing a small act of hospitality towards someone, or a small act of courtesy, the ancients believed that you never know when you could be doing that for someone who's a god in disguise or an angel in disguise. Good things can come back to you in extraordinary ways by doing just small things like that.
Mitch Horowitz with us. We're going to take phone calls next hour with Mitch. I'd love for you to share your stories on just how you have practiced this kind of gratitude and attitude, of course, and how it has affected your life, things that you've witnessed, perhaps, things that you've seen. Black Friday, the biggest retail shopping time of the year, Mitch, some people get very aggressive in these stores. They need to practice this. they need to practice this, don't they?
Very, very carefully, yeah. We don't need more injuries or, heaven forbid, anything worse on Black Friday. I've never fully understood it, but we can all chill out a little bit on Black Friday. You'll find me sitting on my couch.
That's watching horror movies.
That's right, exactly.
All right, stay with us, Mitch. We're going to come back in a moment. The phone lines are now open, and we'll get your calls when you call with Mitch Horowitz as we talk about gratitude and attitude. His book, of course, is called The Miracle Club, How Thoughts Become Reality. I believe it. We'll be back.